Hello, and welcome to Maximize Your Strengths with certified strengths coach, Alyssa Dare Nelson. In this culture focused on weakness fixing, Strengths Finder 2.0 is the answer to explosive business growth and strong relationships. It's time to maximize your strengths.
Well, hey there, you're listening to episode 115 of Maximize Your Strengths. I'm your host, Alyssa Dare Nelson. This podcast is here to help you uncover, celebrate, and truly maximize your strengths, your personal superpowers. Our guest today is Rick Sturger. Rick, in just 5 years, has gone from being a leading tech strategist for companies like Sprint, Samsung, Motorola, and Dell to a rising star in the field of immigration law. With nearly 300% annual growth each year, The Immigration Guy, Rick's law firm, now represents over 100 clients in removal hearings and other immigration matters throughout the world. His adopted cause, the Immigration Law Lab, provides Rick an outlet to be of service helping mothers and children fleeing severe domestic abuse and gang violence in Central America. Rick is incredibly wise and has a great message for us today on stewarding what we're given, honoring and accepting where we currently are in our businesses, and the hidden blessing of giving up our ego. Settle in and enjoy today's episode. Well, Rick, thank you so much for taking time and coming on to Maximize Your Strengths. You are only the second attorney that I've ever had on Maximize Your Strengths. And the reason that I asked you to come on is because, number one, I was completely enamored with you when I met you at the New Media Summit. But I just, you've got this je ne sais quoi about your presence and about your heart. You know, you're this big guy, right? So big guys don't always have this like warm, huggy feel about them, and you totally do. And yet, I know that you've got this tough side to you too. And what I realized after I saw your StrengthsFinder profile, I was like, oh, that's why I was drawn to him. I love the includer. Includer is at number 7 for me, but it is near and dear. It might as well be number 1. And I could just sense that with you. So before we jump in, oh, and then you have Minnesota roots on top of all of that. Come on. So good. So good. So welcome to Maximize Your Strengths. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Okay. So right off the top, let's hear it, since I already gave one of your top five away. What are your top five StrengthsFinder themes?
I am connectedness, strategic, activator, communication, and your favorite,
includer. And my favorite, includer. So many things about your StrengthsFinder profile make sense as to what your mission is in life. And, you know, I never tell people, or rather, I always tell people to not use the StrengthsFinder profile to choose a career. But sometimes your themes just make sense and they draw you into a mission. And so, you know, the connectedness and your includer and your strategic just makes sense as to the immigration law. But can you tell us what your sort of origin story is? Like, how did you go from sales to being an immigration attorney?
Yeah, so I went from being an attorney to being a strategist to being an immigration attorney. Mm-hmm. So the only part of it, of that story, that's really interesting is how I moved from working and building businesses for Fortune 50 companies to running a solo law practice in Escondido, California. And that story is really kind of a story of transition. It was 2009, 2010 time period when I made a decision as part of a divorce that I wanted to be around to spend time with my kids. I'd been a guy that was on a plane 50 to 70% of the time when the economy crashed. I was one of the last people let go by Motorola during the acquisition of Google, of the handset division. And now all of a sudden I was home all the time and job prospects were slim. And my ex-wife decided she liked me better gone 50 to 70% of the time than home 100% of the time. And so we split at that point in time. And I knew that if I took another job like this, like, it was going to impact my kids in a way that I wasn't comfortable doing. So I decided that I need to figure out something to do in town. And I took a consulting gig that was for a couple of years. I met a guy that worked in the building. He was internal affairs for Customs and Border Protection. Like, this is a guy that I normally would not run in any social circle that I bump into. But at the time I smoked. So I would stand out in front of the building in the section that they have partitioned off. This is Southern California. So mind you, we get like roped into a 10-foot section in any square mile of San Diego that you're allowed to smoke. So I started to get to know this guy, and he was interesting. He would tell me about, you know, having to bust these corrupt CBP cops and things like that. Well, he came out hot one day and he was talking about lawyers that are immigration attorneys. He made the statement that you don't have to be a lawyer to be an immigration attorney. And I thought, that's complete bullshit. Like, you do have to be a lawyer. But what he was talking about is that you don't have to be licensed in the state that you're practicing because it's all federal. You only practice at the federal level. And for some reason, I turned around right from there, went upstairs and started the process to reactivate my Minnesota bar. Uh-huh. I'd been defunct for 12 years. I hadn't done anything and I had just let it lapse. So I started the process over the next year of re-getting my license with the idea that, look, you can start practicing law. What are you doing this consulting gig for a commercial insurance company, like dying? I could barely make it till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And thank God I was a consultant, didn't have anybody watching over me, because it was literally painful to be there past 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I started on this thing and I came to the end of this gig and the guy said, you know, look, we're not going to re-up with you. And I remember the freedom that I felt.
You were actually overjoyed. You're like, yes, that's great.
That's right. I was stoked. I think he thought I was a little weird. But what had happened is 3 days before, I had just completed the process of updating all of the years of continuing legal education. Mm-hmm. I had just paid all the back fees back to them. So, I was so happy with what they had provided me. They provided me the spot where I met this guy that sparked the idea, and they provided me the income that allowed and the freedom to be able to not only be earning money, but also be reactivating my license and setting the foundation for what was going to be my future. And it was cool when I came into it. That's how the decision was made. And I started off because nobody knew me as an attorney. I had never practiced law in California. Nobody had any idea. Some people knew I was an attorney, but nobody thought of me as a practicing attorney. Mm-hmm. And so when I started out, I had a small amount in the bank. I mean, this is coming out of the crash and a divorce and all of that stuff. And I just didn't have a huge fund of money. So I just downsized everything. I bought a $2,000 Honda Civic. I moved into a 2-bedroom apartment. My kids shared a room for the first time in their lives. And I got space through a buddy. My first office space was a buddy of mine from high school that was a lawyer that gave me space in his office. He called me up one day. He said, I heard you're going back to practicing law. If you need a place to work,
amazing,
come on in and do this. And he didn't, actually, when he called me, he didn't tell me that he had that. He said he wanted to talk to me about it, about space in his office. And I remember driving down there thinking, I have no money to afford a space. Yeah. And I remember saying to myself in the car, you have no idea what this guy wants to talk to you about. So why don't you just go there with the idea that you're open to whatever he's going to talk about? And, you know, I realized today, one of the things that was really difficult about it was the last thing that I wanted to have to say in that conversation was, you know, I can't afford to do it. Like, that's the thing that I was most afraid of going down there, was to have to say to somebody who I'd known for years, yeah, look, man, I'm doing this on a shoestring and I can't afford to rent it. The crazy thing is, I walk into the meeting and the first thing he says is, he goes, we have been specializing in representing Spanish-speaking clients in workman's comp now for 20 years. We are the largest of our type in San Diego. And we get questions all the time about immigration that we have never been able to answer. Would you consider taking our office that we still have open in Chula Vista and being a presence there in exchange for you being in the office will provide all your support, interpreters, and access to the office.
Oh my gosh. So I have to pause you for a second here, because all through this entire story, I hear your connectedness, right? Like, I was in this place and then I talked to this guy. Like, everything is connected. And for you, you never questioned that. And that's what, how it sounds to me. You didn't really question that. You're like, huh, okay, I'm here. And I met this guy in the smoking ring and, you know, all of these other things. But then on top of that connectedness, you have strategic, right? So you've got this little beautiful strengths baby in your connectedness and your strategic coming together, that you were just kind of like, okay, I'm going to trust this process and I'm going to take the next step. I have two decisions in front of me and this is the one that feels right to me. Right. And so that's what strategic is all about, is it is a planning theme, but it's very, very close to the ground. So there's a Martin Luther King quote that I've used frequently on the podcast here that says, you don't have to see the top of the stairway to take the next step. So in a nutshell, that is what strategic is all about. It's what is the next step up? You may not be able to see the end of the staircase, but you can see that next step. And, you know, so your connectedness allowed you to sort of trust the process and see the web of how we're all connected. And yet, like, okay, and now this is just the decision I'm going to make next. And I love that. And then you add this activator in, right? Like, and you hear that activator just ignite when the gentleman that you spoke to about, hey, you don't need to be licensed in California to practice because it's all federal. You're like, dude, I'm on it, right? And instantaneously you got into action. And that is a gift that is specific to how you're wired. And so I love hearing how each one of these steps, how they occurred, and how, you know, I wonder where positivity is for you too, Rick, because, you know, at every turn you're like, well, okay, I'm gonna choose to see the bright side of this. I'm gonna choose to see the bright side of this. And, you know, just the whole story is just so apropos to leading you into this mission that was the immigration law, right? I just think it's so fascinating. And then, so I'm excited to hear what the next part of the story is, because you didn't just like start a law practice and like, okay, here we go. I'm going to do this a little bit by little bit. 5 years, end over end over end, you're growing by 300%. That's like blow your mind kind of growth. So as a strategist, I know that a lot of that played into how you were able to do that. Probably strategic and activator working together. Like, all right, I see this next step and we're going. But tell us then how you went from a single little room in, of your buddy's office to growing like you have.
Well, the first thing is that I actually went down from there before I ever went up. You said something there about Martin Luther King's being able to see the next step. And you also said something about positivity. And there is something a mentor of mine one time said to me, is that the question of whether the glass is half empty or half full is ridiculous. And it's always misstated. The cup is always full.
I say that all the time, Rick. I say that all the time. But it just may have some air in it, right?
Yeah, but the question you really have to ask yourself is, what kind of steward are you being of what is currently in your cup? Mm. Because that's the only question that matters. Like, how well are you taking? You're asking for more. You want more in your cup. To people who believe that their cup is half empty or half full, they want more. They believe there's more. Well, how often are you really looking at what? Are you taking care, and what is your stewardship of what you already have?
Yeah.
And you know, that's where I focused my time. When I was a small guy that didn't have clients, the first 6 months I didn't have any clients, I went to my ex-wife and I asked her if she would print me up flyers at her office where I had done a lot of work for them. So I didn't feel like I was stealing from them. I asked, she said, I'll go to my boss and see if I can print these up. So she printed up, I even did them half page ones so that I had twice as many on a sheet of paper.
Strategic.
But I personally walked around to apartment complex that were predominantly Spanish speaking. And I was the guy who put the flyer in the doors one after another, all the way down the thing. Like I did it all. And the growth that comes from it is that growth of, that was the most humbling experience that I could possibly have. I remember like the thoughts going on in my head about how can I be putting this on? What's it going to look like when the guy walks in and says, "Hey, aren't you the flyer guy? You're the attorney." Like I would have all these conversations in my head growing to be comfortable enough to do that. Like it literally would take me work. There would be two or three days at the beginning between the ability to go back out and do that.
Yeah.
And having to learn to get comfortable with being right there. And that's why I was that step, like there is only the next step.
Yeah.
So many people are great at, but they don't even realize the torture that their vision oftentimes places them in because they can't see the next step.
Yeah.
And the next step is all that matters.
Right. And or they're not willing to take that next step. There are a lot of people, right, that wouldn't have done the flyers, right? That wouldn't have humbled themselves and say, okay, you know, right now I don't have a team and this is what I know needs to be done. And so I'm just going to do it. You hear a lot of people go, well, there's got to be, you know, some other way. And certainly there's nothing wrong with exploring different options about how to grow your business and how to market and all of those things. But you knew that you had to get your word out. You knew that, you know, that might be the best way to communicate because you weren't going to be able to afford a radio spot and, you know, probably weren't able to afford, you know, a spot in the newspaper. And were they even reading the newspaper anyway? Right. So you knew the best way to get connected with your potential client was to meet them where they were at. And so what I love about that story, Rick, is that you were willing to meet people where they were at. And through that, you know, 6 months of pain. And you guys, as you're listening to this, I want you to hear this. This is entrepreneurship. Sometimes it doesn't happen as fast as you want it to. And Rick, I'm betting you, and I know I've got Activator in my top five. It's painful to not see those immediate results. And yet you still continued on because you had faith in what you were doing. And so when you forget and you get you start to lose patience in your process, go back to why are you doing what you're doing? What is the purpose behind it? And where is it going? You know, find that connectedness, right? Find that includer. Find whatever theme it is that you have that is driving your why so much. Find that again, because otherwise it's really tough to dust your knees off and get back up again, and go back out and put those flyers on all those apartment doors.
Yeah. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, get used to being able to say that I can't afford this. That was the hardest thing to include in my vocabulary. And it wasn't just about like, I can't afford the consultant right now. I can't afford this office space. I can't afford this marketing budget. That's not what I'm talking about. Those are not the ones that hurt the most. The ones that hurt the most is, no, I can't afford to go out for sushi. Right? I can't afford to take the kids with this group from the neighborhood that's going to Cabo San Lucas. I just can't afford that right now. It's the people that are closer around you that it's most difficult to make those statements. And sometimes I'm not talking the people that are closest in your life. Yeah. I'm talking about those first tier people who you're living, who see you as whatever you've been projecting out there. And to have all of that, to be able to allow that to fall away. If you're an entrepreneur, you have to allow that to fall away. I was talking to somebody who was starting a business, and he was telling me about all of the things that he needed before it was going to be successful. And he was going broke. And I asked him, I go, so how did you prepare yourself financially to go out and start? He's all, well, I had plenty of money put away. I go, that isn't the question. The question's not about how much do you have. It's how much are you putting out? Because so at 2 years, Dave Meltzer, he's Warren Moon, the former quarterback his partner, you know, and he's around. He has a podcast with entrepreneur.com, and he's a sports agent and does all this crazy stuff. And I called him up because we had worked several times in different businesses that took off. They just took off. And I called him up in my second year and I said, Dave, man, I'm struggling here. Mm. I don't know how to create the velocity that we've created in other businesses. And it's killing me. And he goes, Rick, I've been talking to you now for almost 2 years watching you develop this business. And this is a guy that talks to every CEO in the country. So he goes, the number one thing that I've learned from all these guys is that the only thing you have to do in business is stay in business. So everything that you've done so far, by keeping your overhead low, by keeping your lifestyle within the bounds of what you can do, you've laid a foundation, and I've watched you at every step lay a foundation. He goes, go back to those companies we started, and we would take off with velocity, but they would seem to crumble because the foundations were never really there. We could get them up and running and high flying really quickly. You know, you throw a lot of money at it, you know, you use a bunch of your connections and you get this thing up there, but it doesn't have the foundation to stay alive. And he goes, all you have to do is continue to focus on the foundation, use sound financial principles, and stay in business. Always make the decision to stay in business. And people hear this all the time and they don't really pay attention to it. But most people quit right before they're about to make it.
Yeah. That's that three feet from gold moment. I don't know if you've ever seen that cartoon where you've got the guy, you know, with his pickaxe, right? And he's like, there's diamonds or gold on the other side of like, and he's been digging forever. And he finally gives up. And it's like, oh, you were so close. And you're right. It there's like when they're right before that breakthrough, there's that area of utter frustration. And you do, you have to just choose to stick through that until. And so that is, I love that you said that, because it really is about stick-to-itiveness. It's really about, you know, digging deep and being willing to push through even when you feel like you can't push through anymore. Now, I will ask you this question. How do you know when it's time to quit? When it's time to move in a different direction? Because this is the crux. Like, well, how do I know if this business just does not have legs or if I just need to push through? People ask me this question all the time and I'm like, well, kind of depends. Like, let's talk it out. But what would you say?
Well, first off, there is a big depends in there. The nature of different businesses are going to place you in different, you know, if you have a product that you can't protect and nobody's going to invest in, then the second you learn that that's the situation that you're in, you should probably redirect your energy towards a different product. There is no quitting.
I love that. I noticed that you started to say, redirect your energy. I loved how you did that. That was perfect.
Yeah. And so in a service business, the first question you really have to ask yourself is, do you want to be great at the service that you provide? If that's not your key goal, is to be the greatest. If your key goal is to make a lot of money doing the service that you do, not that there's anything wrong with making a lot of money. Right. That's great. But if you don't want to be great at the service you provide, you're never going to make a lot of money at it. Mm-hmm. You may con a few people for a while, but eventually it's going to implode.
Right.
So part of the foundation of being a great service provider is, are you doing the work individually that's required to make you great at whatever service you're providing to somebody? And I see that all the time. I mean, people are set up for failure because they're not focused on what really is going to make them successful, which is to be very good or working to be great at whatever you do. If you don't have that passion to be great at what you're doing, the day you learn that you don't have that passion to be great at what you're doing, it's time to redirect your energy towards something that you do want to be great at. And you know what? It's okay to want to be great at being the guy that works at the surf shop across the street from a great surf break. It's okay to be the guy that wants to teach English in a third world country. It's okay to be a guy that wants to go dig wells in Africa for people. It's okay to say that my life or the time that I have free is more important to me than anything else that I do in my life. And I'm going to make decisions based on that money and things are not the most important. Your definition of success has to be your own definition of success. And you're going to know whether it's right when you have peace in your chest and your stomach. When you stop having the clenching and the twisting and that heaviness in your chest, whatever creates that in your life, then that's where you got to get to. Now, for those people that you know that that's what you want to do, you're still going to have those times where you have that clenching and all of that in the chest. That is the signal to where you need to grow personally. Mm-hmm. In order to be prepared to move to the next step. You shared with me in the beginning, like how our strengths can trigger certain things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And our strengths, when they run up to external resistance, mm-hmm. it can trigger something. It's an external external event creates an environmental is what you mm-hmm. used. Mm-hmm. And you said, and then there's internal reactions that occur within us based on where we find our strengths and where we get our energy.
Yeah.
Look, both, when you say those things trigger, there's an experience that we have within our body, and that is the indicator of growth for me. And I share this story with people. I was speaking in front of a crowd. It wasn't a big crowd. It was only like 80 or 100 people. But I was shocked that at the end of it, like 10 or 12 people came up to me. And what was shocking about it is they all had a question about the same statement that I had made in it. And what I had said was that I had grown my business. From a business perspective, to most outside viewers, would look like attention that bordered on neglect. And nobody understood what that meant. And what I said is that the battle that I'm facing has nothing to do with any external factors. All the external factors do is they'll help bring up the things that I need to address inside that I'm not ready to handle. Mm. And this comes up in a lot of areas. This came up for me in the ability to have to run a small business. You know, I said that I went down mm-hmm. from where I was when I was borrowing somebody's office. I became the guy. I set up a desk like Lucy from Peanuts. This is crazy. So I set up a desk in a video store, Las Delicias Videos, in a all Spanish speaking corner strip mall. And you would think, why would you set up a table in a video store? This is in 2012, 2011 mm-hmm. when I did this. Nobody even watches videos anymore. But what it was the largest money transfer location in North County, San Diego, where the highest population of immigrants reside. So every night there would be people lined up out the door who are coming in to send money down to Central South America and Mexico. So I set up a table there giving free consultations on immigration. And that's when my business really started to take off. And I moved from Chula Vista up here. I can't even begin to tell you the crazy stories that go on. Yeah. But to circle back to this thing is that in all this time, the thing that I was having to confront and in every situation I was having to confront was my ego and my pride.
Right.
My ego and my pride and those feelings that, I don't look good enough to the outside world. And if I don't look good enough, this guy that I was talking to, the first two things that he did when he moved to a less expensive place of the country, he bought a house in the most expensive neighborhood. He bought a Mercedes, high-end Mercedes. I told him, the first thing I did when I started a business was I got rid of my luxury
car. Sold everything.
And sold everything and moved into the smallest, least expensive place I could be, keeping my kids in the school district that was important to me. And that's what I did. So
I love that. You know, we didn't talk about immigration law very, very much, but this is so valuable because you guys, I want to bring you back to noticing and remembering just how massive Rick's growth has been and how he chose to build the foundation of his business. And so whether you're an attorney, whether you're in any other entrepreneurial field, like remember this, that the foundation of the stewardship, right? I mean, we talked about finances and stewardship and emotional stewardship as well as things. That is the most important. Build that foundation and then just keep going. So, here in Minnesota, we have a fairly large immigrant population, and certainly in California and certainly all over the country. Can people who are having challenges, because it's a federal thing, can they reach out to you if they're having challenges with immigration issues?
Absolutely. My practice, I have people all over the world. I have people that are in these countries that are challenged right now by issues like the ban. And yeah. I have clients all over the country. I do largely removal defense. So it's when people run into, when the government decides that we're going to try and get you out of the country. And I do cases throughout primarily the West, but you can always get a hold of me. I'm part of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, particularly in your region. I can find people. I mean, I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota Law School. My first case was a fellowship going down to Texas as a law student and went down and defended a Nigerian guy. That was 20 years ago. And I have plenty of classmates that are still in that region. In fact, probably one of the top immigration lawyers in the country, Maria Baldini-Poderman, is in Chicago. And I could definitely find anybody around anywhere, an attorney that can help them. Oftentimes, a local attorney is going to be important.
Okay. Very, very good to know, because this is not an area that I'm certainly have any kind of expertise on, which is why I'm glad that you do. So where can people reach out to you, whether as a resource or to hire you if they're having issues? How can people find you?
Yeah, theimmigrationguy.com.
TheImmigrationGuy.com. Awesome. Awesome. I so appreciate it. This podcast is so fun because we never know exactly where it's going to go. You can clearly see that Rick knows what he's talking about. Very, very good head on his shoulders and can help you if you are running up against immigration issues. And unfortunately, we're having more and more and more of those issues arise in this day and age. It just is what it is. So reach out to Rick at theimmigrationguy.com. Rick, thank you for taking the time. This was such a rich conversation, and I really, really appreciate you.
Oh, I love what you do, Alyssa. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for spending time with us today. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. To reach Rick, head on over to theimmigrationguy.com. And if you're ready to unlock and unleash your superpowers, let me help. Email me and let me know what it would mean for your business if you could give up focusing on all the things that drain you and instead focus on what you love and what makes you money. You can reach me personally at Alyssa@daretosucceed.com. And yes, I really, truly do want to hear from you. It's Alyssa@daretosucceed.com. Alyssa@daire2succeed.com. Remember, you are uniquely poised and wired for success. As Donald Clifton said, your weaknesses will never develop, while your strengths will develop infinitely. Bye for now.